can immediately go to the next committee meeting. Staff are changing. Let me go ahead and start with, are there any additions, corrections, or changes to the agenda? If not, without objection, the agenda is approved. As, are there any additions, corrections, or changes to the minutes? Hearing none, that is also approved as submitted. Which brings us to the action items, and the first action item is on the third line. Do we have people here for that?
Good morning, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Keeping with this one, Nat.
We've already identified.
Keeping with the philosophy of the previous committee, can you try to avoid reading the entire staff report?
Absolutely, that was my intent.
Thank you.
That was my intention. And Chair Benjamin has started to identify me with the Nat. I'm Nat Bodekheimer, Assistant General Manager for Planning and Joint Development. Go to the next slide. We're here today to request approval of the staff report. Oop, that's pretty quick. Can we
go back?
Just to clarify the purpose, to request approval of the staff report and recommendations on the proposed restructuring of the regional metro bus routes along Pennsylvania Avenue and Wisconsin Avenue. Can we go to the next slide? I think you've seen a fair amount of the background before, so I'm going to skip to the new materials to you. Moving on to the account of the public hearings that were held in 2 months ago. Two public hearings held, March 17th, March 19th, one in Northwest, one in Southeast. 21 people attended each of the public hearings, and generally the comments were supportive, in fact overwhelmingly, specifically support for the new local service on Wisconsin and the limited stop service, the 37, that would go on Massachusetts Avenue. Concerns expressed about the effectiveness of supervision in the monitoring plan, which is a key part of the overall proposal, and suggestions to speed the boarding process on limited stop routes, but none questioning the overall proposal to restructure the routes, and a lot of support and enthusiasm for it. And so after reviewing the public hearing testimony, we were recommending that the restructuring plan be approved as we have proposed it in the docket. And a key part of this, I highlight, is the addition of 5 street supervisors to be added to help us achieve the reliability goals that we've identified for the route. Next, again, this is another summary that I believe you've seen before. Next, we'll talk about the funding impact. The net funding impact is $400,000 to the budget this year. The total funding impact of the study is approximately $1 million, but part of that cost is offset by a reduction in service on regional routes 70 and 71, and the remaining cost is the cost of the street supervisors. So the operating the bus operating costs, the standard operating costs of the restructuring are paid for by service reductions on 70 and 71, and it's really the net new is the speed supervisors. This is a summary of, actually, can we go back to the funding impact? I wanted to talk just briefly about the fact that it has been put forward as a regional service, and I wanted to comment on that. We did some research on service restructurings that have been done since 1998, and we've done 13 restructurings during that time or regional routes, and I believe all of them were introduced after restructurings as regional services. Where we've had a wide variety of approach is when we've introduced new services, and sometimes those services have been introduced on a reimbursable basis, sometimes those new services have been introduced on a regional basis, but for restructurings on regional routes, they have always been paid for at regional. That has been the practice. I don't believe there's a policy on that, though. This is a slide showing the funding impact by local jurisdiction. Move on to the next slide. Again, now I'm just cutting to the chase, the recommendation again that the board approve the staff report and a recommendation to implement the proposed restructuring. and to add five street advisors. That concludes the presentation.
Question on that slide right there. Just the question on the 400,000, and I see in the resolution where it calls for the FY09 budget to be increased. Just a technical question. That budget, of course, hasn't been approved. So what is the meaning of, the committee recommends the board acts, in 2 weeks. What's the meaning of amending the, increasing the budget by 400,000 just in terms of our process?
We have some adjustments we'll present to you today. We'd add it to that list of proposed adjustments.
But that just says you've got a more question. So you've asked my question again. Okay, so now what's the meaning of that? How do you amend a budget that hasn't been approved?
It should be proposed.
But we wouldn't act at this point to amend a proposed budget.
Right.
Along the line of what Mr. Zimmerman is saying, there are, as you pointed out, Mr. Woodruff, a number of adjustments that you're going to be talking about later on. Without objection from the committee, I think it might be useful for us to hear all of those before we vote on this action, given that this also has a financial impact on that proposed budget. Are there other questions other than that?
Yes. The street supervisors, obviously that's the funding impact, and there's five routes and five street supervisors. Can you describe for us exactly what a street supervisor does and why the necessity to have one for each of the routes?
But I may ask for staff support on some of the more details of the operations, but they're located at five points along the line, one in downtown, one each at the two points where buses turn around, one at the west end of the Central Business District, one at the east end of the Central Business District, and then at the and also at the terminals at the ends of the line. So that's where they're physically located. And what they're empowered to do is to hold buses, to offload buses if necessary, so that a lightly loaded bus can have its passengers be transferred to another bus and then held. They can short turn a bus, which means that if there's a big gap going the other way, you can stop the bus and then turn it around before it gets to the end of the route. So basically what it is it's much more active management of the quality of service. You're looking at the spacing, you're looking at the crowding, you're looking at the schedule adherence, and you're making decisions in the field about how to maintain spacing between the buses and to maintain the headways that are being advertised. So it's on this line, which is 20,000 a day, it's our highest ridership, through some of our most trafficked corridors. It's a very important function to maintain the reliability for so many passengers.
So the staff recommendation is you cannot do this with less than five street supervisors.
Additional supervisors. We have supervisors out in the field, but one of the critical elements of bus operations, you can automate, you get a whole host of things, but nothing replaces the supervision in the field. And that's been an area that we've not made major improvements on over the past few years that we're focusing on as we go forward to reduce the bunching of buses to ensure that they operate more on time. As Mr. Zimmerman brought up this morning, we need to report that better, and we need to make major improvements in that area. And the spacing of buses, it's a change back to a philosophy that is really decades old. That we got away from because of lack of staffing that we're recommending that we go forward with to improve the quality of service.
First, let me commend the staff for this work. I was involved in the public hearings on this corridor. I think the approach of looking at delivering a service that works for the entire corridor is really what's needed. Model for other lines we go forward. Now, that being said, one of the things I know we're looking to do on this corridor is reduce or eliminate some of the routes that exist, basically kind of make rationalizing the service on the corridor. Is it possible in rationalizing to see efficiencies that absorb the cost of the supervisors?
We can look at some of the issues of doing that, and I think as we get to the budget presentation, you'll find that we have shifted other dollars around to accommodate some changes and recommendations inclusive of this. That's exactly what we're going to look at in, over the next few months. It's all of our routes to determine the efficiency of those, are the things we can do by eliminating stops, for an example, that are not utilized, working with the jurisdictions on bus-only lanes during peak periods, all of those things to improve that quality and improve the efficiency and reduce the cost of operating the service.
Mr. Lennon?
I only want to add, Ms. Cale was mentioning the bus supervisor, that this was new, but we had a bus here came in with the operations. So one of the things they suggested that was concerned was the lack of bus supervisor and how that contributed to the budget of some of the issues that we had. And that was something that was really important.
That's right, where I want to figure out. This would add 5 street supervisors for this line. How many are there now?
No, I think you're speaking of system one, aren't you?
No, I meant on this line.
Oh, okay.
How many on the 30?
Jim Hamry, manager in planning.
I vaguely recognize him.
Good morning. The supervision in the district is split into divisions, and so this line actually crosses 3 different divisions, and so we don't have a dedicated supervisor core for this line. That's one of our recommendations, so that they can get to know the line and be specifically aware of its operational concerns.
So right now they're getting pieces of other supervisors who are doing other things.
Right. There will be a supervisor in Northwest. There's one downtown. There's one in Southeast, one in Northeast.
And when you're done with this, this will have 5 dedicated supervisors and no others.
There'll be a team, and we'll use the existing supervisors, but we will have a core group that will be assigned and responsible for this
one. So if I was doing an FTE equivalent, Mr. Hamry, about how many supervisors would you say would be working this line?
Say over the course of a 7-day, 23-hour-a-day operation, you'd probably be looking at a total of 15 FTEs that would be engaged at one point or another in supervising this line.
Okay. Now, to use a line I know better, and you know even better than I do, the busiest line in Virginia and perhaps the nearest equivalent that we have would be the 16 line. That got a dedicated supervisor 5 years ago or so when we upgraded the service, and is now getting a second supervisor, correct?
I believe that's correct. There's a supervisor at the Pentagon at the 16-line station. There's the scout car supervisor that's been operating for the last 5 years, and then the new one. So there's actually a total of 3 that are working on the pike ride. And then there is a divisional, regional supervision that's going on that's also supporting that line.
Okay, well,
so that gives a total of 4 FTEs that are engaged in pike ride.
My question is this. I picked the one that's our busiest line. This is a busier line. This is one of the busiest in the
city. Double, yeah.
What is the average regular ridership?
It's around 20,000.
Not 20,000. We have around 12,000 or something like that. 16. So I understand the importance of the supervisors, at least enough so that I'm willing to give this whole thing a try and see if it helps, because we need these lines to be more reliable, and I continue to see 16 buses driving in pairs, even though they're supposed to be timed, apart, as I saw the other day, as I stood there and watched 2 pairs go by together. So, to the extent that can help, that sort of thing, great. But it isn't clear to me what the overall plan is, or there's any kind of internal policy for how you allocate this supervision, and how much, is it based on ridership? The 30s line probably needs more street supervisors than 16 lines because it's bigger. It's not quite double. It sounds to me like it's going to have a lot more supervisors. That may be appropriate for some reason. It's just, there are lots of lines in the system, and we have to allocate these somehow, and it isn't clear to me how you make the decision on this or how we should be allocating the resources for which, Virginia's going to pay a quarter of the cost of this line that's entirely on the other side of the river. So I'd sort of like to know what the rhyme or reason is.
Okay. The details of this specific one, again, we talked about why we wanted to add more people, but the overall issue of supervision, the number and the deployment and reporting relationships and responsibility that's currently being assessed as part of the assessment being done by Galen Moffitt and Associates. And the intent is to look at several things. Are we utilizing the resources in the most effective manner, an efficient manner, the structure of reporting relationships, the assignment that they have and the responsibilities of those assignments, and also the deployment of supervisors during time of day, day of week. We're looking at every aspect of that, and that's part of those recommendations that will be coming back this year. It is an area that I think we need to become more effective at, and our current, we do not have a policy, in my judgment, that looks at the what is the best way of assigning people and what's the most effective way of doing that.
Well, I think it's really important. Let me say, first of all, that what's going on here is really a good thing, and I am strongly in favor of improving bus services by, you know, restructuring lines so that they function better, because many of them, it's been, in some cases, decades, really, since anybody looked at them. Running more buses more frequently and more reliably is the best thing we can do for transportation in this region that we can do in any kind of a short-term basis. And I think that has to be part of the mix. And so I applaud the overall effort here, you know, to improve this line. I also recognize that it's a regional system, and that's why there's a formula, and that's why, you know, a quarter of this cost gets paid for by my side of the river. And, you know, when you look at things overall, the same can be said of things the other way. However, I think we really need to have something that is more of an integrated plan or policy for how we allocate this. We have that much more clearly worked out on the rail side than we have on bus. And, you know, let me say, again, you know, it's not that many years ago. We had a minor improvement we wanted to do on a bus line that I mentioned earlier, and that improvement was going to, you know, be regional and was going to cost the state of Maryland $2,000, and the state of Maryland vetoed it. So, you know, it's hard for me to forget that when I look at something that's going to cost my state $100,000 and probably will serve fewer people on my side of the line than that line would have. But, you know, that's what's going to happen if we have piece by piece decisions on improvements on lines. And on each one, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm going to ask to veto this because it doesn't benefit our people, because I know better. And I know, you know, there really is a commitment to regionalism that is important. And I know that there are other improvements, and, you know, everybody will be paying for those too. But we have to be able to demonstrate that as well. And so, when you know, it would be easy for somebody to look at this and say, gee, they're getting, you know, Cadillac service, which I am not saying. I think this is actually moving the direction we all need to be moving. But, you know, I hope you'll hear that my concern is that if this was all we were doing, there would be a real question about why we were paying for this one line. Now, again, if there's an overall plan for how we provide service and agreement that benefits everybody, that's really good. I really want to see this move ahead, because I think it's the way we need to go. But, you know, we're going to have another plan in here, you know, for something. It's going to be in Maryland, it's going to be in Virginia, and there's going to be somebody else saying, why is my taxpayers paying for this thing? And, you know, you lose it because you do it piece by piece, and because we don't have an overall thing where you can say, well, that's the formula, and they pay more on this, and we pay more on that, and so on.
Yeah, I just want to say we have a great opportunity to continue the conversation in 2 weeks when we come forward with the priority corridor network that we're proposing, 24 corridors around the region, and the improvements that we're recommending as staff. So we can talk about it at that time. 24 lines over 6 years, and get into the details of that.
I'd like to comment, Mr. Zimmerman.
I realize it was a different group of people than are sitting at this table, but that in a way is my point, because, you know, from year to year, who knows who's at this table in any of these seats, and we have to have an understanding that can carry forward throughout the years.
Well, and also consistent with the discussion that we just had, one of the things that I requested earlier, and I hope that we will do, and reflecting what Mr. Woodruff said, I hope that we will not vote on this until we see all the other pieces budget changes and then put them all together and see where we're going to be. Mr. Monomy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think what I heard, maybe I didn't hear the same, is this essentially a pilot? This is the direction. This is the way we believe we want to augment and deliver service on our high ridership corridors going forward. So we want to see how this works. It's possibly a way to replicate along other routes. This is This is the first cut at a pilot.
Well, I mean, there were also previous experiences as well. I mean, on the Columbia Pike is, you know, a pilot. Rex was a pilot of a type. The Metro Extra on George Avenue was a pilot. I think this is a really wholesale restructuring. It's of the type that we would like to be doing for all the 24 routes that are corridors that are going to be in our plan presented in 2 weeks. So, I mean, it's not, it has a pilot aspect, but I mean, it is of a piece of what we want to do. We'll be tailoring the solutions to each corridor's particular needs. So every corridor will be a little bit different. I'm not sure about that. The one point I would like to make to the committee is that I understand that there would be a need to desire to hold off on the particular budget, how it's handled on a budgetary basis. In order to get the service started June 30th, I think we would need to have some kind of indication from the board that would allow us to begin the preparations, pick training supervisors and all the other things that need to be.
Mr. Bonningham, we do plan to deal with it in the meeting. We just want to do it.
Subsequently.
Seeing all the other pieces to the budget that are coming forward. Yes, so please don't go away.
If I could direct a question to Mr. Zimmerman, what has been the experience on the 16 round? Did it work? Did it deliver what you were looking for?
I guess I don't know, and that's one of the things I'd like to see, you know, some more evaluation of, because that is one of the questions I have. But, you know, it seems to me that we have a better performing line because we're definitely putting more service out there. So when you're running buses very frequently, you know, so instead of being, you know, 3 minutes apart, they're 6 minutes apart, it's not quite the same thing as when they're 30 minutes apart. On the other hand, I don't know why I'm running so many buses in pairs all the time, and that hasn't been fixed. We're just now getting the second supervisor, and it's one of the things that they're hoping will help address that, along with some other issues they're trying to deal with. But I'd say the jury's out.
If we could postpone action on this one, but complete the discussion on this and move on with the DVE goal, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
Actually, in the interest of time, let me try something. Ms. Wilson, may I summarize what I think is here, see whether you need to add to that, and see if the board is, or if the committee is ready to act. If I understand correctly, you very carefully calculated the basis for a 25% PDE goal. You've shown how it was developed and how it relates to what's gone on in the past. And this year, we are actually above that level. In actual performance, even though that's our goal. So we can justify a 25% goal. We seem to be able to meet the 25% goal. And this is going out for public comment. We're not being asked to approve the goal.
Correct. And if I may be in.
Go ahead.
All I want to do is just have a chance to introduce my new director of community relations. And may I introduce Jorge Navarez. Jorge is in charge of not only community relations, but also the DBE program, which falls under his purview. So I wanted to take that opportunity to introduce him to you, and we look forward to be working with him.
Thank you.
Navarez, thank you for joining us. We're happy to have you, and that was an excellent presentation.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
you look like you want to say something.
No, go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is the committee okay with a vote at this point, or are there questions, or do we want any questions?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good presentation.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Our next item. Mr. Francis.
This is all in.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, at the March Finance Committee, the board requested additional information in reference to the service improvements in operations. Next slide. The total service improvements in rail operation was $9 million, were attributed to the deployment of the 6,000 series cars. We made some of the six-car trains, eight-car trains. It's broken down to where it was 4 million additional miles for that, wages and fringes, and analyzed FY08 wages and the propulsion costs totaled out to $9 million. Next slide.
I think we have a technical problem. There we go.
Okay. Costs associated with operating 6-car trains versus the 4-car trains we were running during non-peak totaled out to $5 million. Also, it was 3.6 additional million miles. And also, there was some additional rail car parts, and the propulsion costs was associated with that as well.
Francis, so, may I ask a historical question here, please? Just when we're ready to approve the going out to hearing on the fare increase, one of the things that the general manager did was reduce some areas of the budget. And we got a presentation just as we approved the fare increase. At that time, there was an area that was called expanded service, which I think is the same as service improvements. And he cut the budget from the budget for those areas from $41 million to $20 million. And the rail service area, he cut it from $7 million to $5 million. And now it's up to $14 million. I'm not quite sure how that happened.
The numbers you said are exactly right, the $41 million to $20 million, and that was prior to the finalization of this 09 budget. So as we went through the budget process and wrapped it up, there was money, and I believe the number was around $10 million, that was available in the overall budget, and the decision by the general manager was to restore some of these items.
So what's happened here is we went down, then you decided that we didn't need to go down, and it's gone back up, and you're not telling us that it's back up. But at one point you felt it was possible to cut it.
Yes, but we did.
Maybe not desirable, but possible.
Right.
Correct. But we did come back, and as you say, the time frame was kind of in the October time frame where we made the proposed reduction, and then we developed the budget. And since the budget was presented in January, this amount of funding has been in the budget for these purposes.
So it went back in,
yes, sir,
after the last presentation. Okay. Any other questions at this point? All right.
Okay, next slide. Bus service improvements totaled to $8 million. $3 million of those dollars were service increases to improve customer service on various lines, to reduce overcrowding or improve the reliability on those lines. $4.8 million was the operating costs associated with the move on Southeast Bus Garage, and West Sox Garage operational mid-year cost was about $600,000.
Once again, the same issue. When you to us in that same presentation for the bus service improvements, you originally had $7 million, you're now up to $8 million, and you cut it to zero. Now it's back up to $8 million. But what makes it difficult for us is we don't see these changes coming about.
Okay.
All of a sudden it's back, and we didn't, I'm sure I could have found it somewhere in the screen book, but I guess I didn't find it because it gets distributed in so many different places you can't find the actual numbers. So it makes it difficult for us to do an assessment of the budget when it's there, it goes away, and all of a sudden it's there again, and you're explaining it to us.
And we can highlight it. Maybe we need to highlight it more. As I said in the budget presentation in January, these are the numbers. These numbers haven't changed since the budget was released in January, but maybe we need to highlight more that this is a restoration.
I guess one of the things why don't we look at how we want to do that next year? I mean, it's too late to do much of this issue. I just want to make sure that we all understand what has happened and where we are. And Mr. Graham just made a comment. All of these numbers are in the existing budget. Is that right?
That's correct.
And thus submitted to the jurisdiction.
Correct.
And the reimbursables?
Next page. Next page.
Okay. This is a move existing bus routes from reimbursable to non-regional service. So that totals to $4.2 million.
And these are the ones that you proposed and we discussed last time. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes.
Are they in the budget or not in the budget?
They're in the budget.
They are in the subsidy. The question is, are they in the budget? So they're already in the base.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying. You're asking, is this in the base, and are we adding on top of the base these numbers, or did we subtract it out of the base and we're separating it?
I'm Chad Krakowski from the budget office. These reimbursables are carved out separately. When we built the 09, they were moved into your base numbers as part of the 09 proposal. These four reimbursables went from reimbursable into the non-regional part of your budget, base 09 budget.
Let me try it again. Mr. Krakowski, these are part of the base as regional routes within the budget. Is that right?
They're non-regional. These right here are moving from reimbursable to non-regional.
Okay, to non-regional.
These are not the four that the board has.
This is a different four.
Yes.
All right. But these are in the base budget.
Correct.
And have they been subtracted? Is there going to non-regional service? Have they been subtracted out of the base budget?
They were subtracted out of your reimbursables. I'm looking at two buckets. You have a reimbursable. They've been taken out of there and moved into the non-regional.
So you're saying subsidy is identical.
Correct.
Because it's just located in
different.
But we're not increasing the budget because of this.
No.
And then we have four more that we'll talk about later that
Correct.
We talked about last month.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Next slide. And $4 million are attributable to Metro Access, $2.6 to increase contract personnel for the call center. $700,000 to extend the insurance coverage, and this is a one-time cost, and the technology to enhance the scheduling software in addition to the trapeze system. That's a one-time cost as well.
The $2.6 million that you have here presumably is going to have a substantial effect on quality of service?
The answer is yes.
Yes.
Do we have some metrics to see how those $2.6 million are going to help us? Are we going to measure that? It would be very useful to know what this investment is going to be. I see what it says, quality and timeliness, but if you could set some goals as to what this will do and get back to us with those, and then over the next year measure those and say, are we in fact accomplishing what we said we were going to accomplish, that would be very helpful.
Yes, sir. We would do that.
Yeah, this is in the budget.
Everything's in the budget?
Yes.
Can we go back to the Southeastern Bus Garage? America. You want to comment on this $4.8 million and where this is?
One more.
My understanding is the $4.8 million associated with the relocation of the buses, the Southeast Bus Garage, paid from funds associated with the sale of the facility. Subtracted from the proceeds.
That was my understanding that the proceeds would be some 69 and 9 of that would go towards this deadheading cost.
And so that's not really money that DC is going to reimburse at this point.
Thus, it's not in the DC.
It is not needed.
It's a reimbursable. Pardon me?
It does not need to be.
No, I understand. I understand what you're
just
saying, but I just wanted the clarity of this because, see, this shouldn't read this item is 100% reimbursed by DC. This item is 100% reimbursed by the sale of the garage.
Or by the reserve that you put that money in.
Is that right?
Good point.
To make sure. Just a point of clarification until you don't mind. Jack is coming forward. I think there's a little bit more detail on this issue that we need to talk about.
Jack Rickwa. The sale of the property and the use of the $9 million out of the $69 million is intended to pay for the reallocation of the cost once we've had the sale of Southeast and we have a new location for a bus facility to allow us to pay for the reallocation while we're actually constructing the facility. The intent, I think, of this is intended to say that if those actions don't take place, that we have $1.39 million from the project to pay for reallocation costs, which is currently underway, and then after that, the district would contribute money to pay for the reallocation until the bus garage is sold and we have a new location for a facility.
Yes.
Right. No. So it's a contingency, but the fact of the matter is that once there is a sale of the Southeastern Bus Garage property, that therefore would generate the $9 million to include this. So there is no awaiting for the ultimate construction. Am I missing something?
I think it's 2 points on it. I think it's the sell and the locate. Once we obtain a new location.
No, but once you have the sale, you have the money.
We have the money, but we don't have the location to start building the garage, and the $9 million is to pay for the reallocation cost while the garage is actually being built. Since we have no date in mind as to, you know, specific date as to when that would start, the board authorized the commitment of the $1.39 million that was left over from the original sale of the parking lot, and the district was going to commit to picking up the difference until that is in place.
But that doesn't make any sense. Well, we have to see the resolution, I suppose.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is that the money is in hand. And so it doesn't make sense with the money in hand that the district government has to pay for this until there's actually a functioning bus club.
Well,
when you have the money in hand.
If I recall the process, and it was a lot going on at the time, the sale has not been finalized. And we were going to stay in the southeast garage because we did not have the sale. The agreement was that we would move once the sale took place. Given that the sale has been delayed, there was discussion on lists of the district, and because of the issues of the new stadium opening, the baseball stadium, that we would move before the sale takes place. And the district said that we would be reimbursed for those deadhead costs until two events occurred: the sale of the property, as well as the attainment of the new site to build a facility. And that has not occurred yet. We're still negotiating on the sites, as well as working out issues concerning the sale of the facility.
Let me try and summarize what I think I'm hearing relative to the budget, as opposed to the actual decision. You're putting us on notice at this point that this item is in the budget in terms of the expenditure.
Yes.
And the source of the funds depends upon the sale of the garage and the purchase of a location for the construction of the new one. Is that important? Acquiring a location for the construction of the new one. If both of those occur, the money comes from the reserve. If those do not both occur, according to this, the money comes from the District of Columbia, but the expense portion of the budget stays identical in either case.
Correct.
But then will the District of Columbia be reimbursed for what it pays from the $9 million?
No.
So when are we going to run out of this $1.4 million? $1.3 million.
It's about 4 months from the start. I think a month and a half into the period. March 29th was the first day of the reallocation, so we're about 4 months from then, and the money should, 1.4 would be gone.
Will be gone.
Okay, so we move on. This may or may not be something that we want to discuss further in terms of the non-budgetary issues. But
I think it's helpful clarity.
Very good that we understand that at least what the position appears to be at this point.
Okay.
Moving on, we dealt with metro access. So
that concludes the present, yes.
Are there any questions on the service presentation? If not, moving on to the funding strategy for urgent unfunded capital needs. Is that the next one? No, I'm sorry. Ridership.
Let's go.
Ridership analysis. Mr. Harkin's absence.
Yes, thank you. A brief review of the revenue and ridership analysis. And if we could look at page 55, beginning with the Metro Rail, you see the rail average fare, and it was averaging about $2. The fare increase occurred It went up to 233. It's not on this chart, but we've just determined that it came down a little bit, but went up to 229. Bottom line is the budget has an assumption that's slightly high on the average fare, maybe 2 cents high. On the next slide, you can see that more on average fares. You can see that average fares have the general slope of the line is an increase over the years, minor variations, and you can see the note there about red is above the blue, that's more revenue, and if the red line, which is the actual, is below the blue, that's less revenue. And you can simply see the point is that there are variations year to year on this.
Can we stop you there?
Sure.
So what you're saying is, since the slope of this line is up, you felt that in this budget for 08, you could increase the average fare?
Exactly. Looking at the trend over years would indicate.
You did not accomplish that.
By about 2 cents, it's not quite as high as projected.
And the reason that this trend is not continuing?
I think the reason is over the prior years, going back to the 02, there were garages being built at the end stations, the New Carrollton, Vienna, some of those garages had added to it, so you had longer trips and hence the average fare was going up, and I think this is my speculation, that's the primary change.
That makes a lot of sense. What you're saying is as long as we were continuing to attract riders who were taking longer trips out of proportion to those taking shorter trips, because those garages were there and opening, the average fare was going up. When that stops happening and your attraction is more evenly spread across the different types of trips, your average fare does not go up as much.
Yes, sir.
It's still
questions about that?
It's still higher, though.
Not really. The average fare looks like, if you go back to, you know, other than the fare increase, it's actually a little bit lower. If you go back one chart, you can see that it's running low instead of it's going down those last. Actually, ever since July, it's been going down a little bit.
All right, but I mean, at the moment, above what we budget. But what you're saying is, correcting for the change in fare.
Correct.
What this is really telling us is something about the distribution of the trips. And if you get, you don't even have to have a decline in the outer stations, although we had some evidence of that we discussed a few months ago. But if all you have is an increase in ridership within the core, let's say, then average fare will go down.
Right.
By definition.
What I hear staff saying is we're getting a more balanced increase in trips rather than a skewed towards the long trips, and the reason for that would appear to be that the garages are
maxed out basically.
Right.
But more importantly, and I think this is a significant point, Mr. Chairman, if over time you have more transit-oriented development, more smart growth in the region, the average fare should go down. Because what happens is people are taking shorter trips, which actually is a good thing. And they're nearer to things they need to be, and that should result.
What I think is important here is what staff is telling us is 408 average fare was overstated, not including the fare increase. And that therefore that has an effect as a base for 09 and any increase they might want to project for 09.
Correct, yes. Okay, if we could move to the next slide, please. The fare increase is generating just virtually exactly what was projected on the rail side of the house. It was $5 million a month.
May I ask a question about that? When we approved the fare increase and you did your projections, remember the long discussions about elasticity and the fact that we were going to lose ridership? So our projections did, in fact, include some amount of ridership loss.
They did.
We didn't have that ridership loss. Instead, we had a ridership increase. So what was the reason that it came out exactly as we projected it, and we were projecting the loss and we got an increase?
If I recall correctly, the fare increase approved by the board, there was some question if that could have obtained the $109 million necessary to balance the 09 budget. We thought it might come in a little bit lower, but as a result of that increase plus increase in ridership overall, that that's what we think is happening.
Right, and I think when the fare was increased, what the board ultimately increased, there were some minor adjustments made from what was proposed, which would have reduced the revenue slightly. So that factored in into this somewhat. So what Mr. Cato said, what the minor changes were, combined with the fact that we didn't have a loss in revenue, all of those factors put us virtually on the target amount to generate the $109 million.
Any other questions?
And yeah, to next slide, please. To this very point, the fare increase, we have not seen any impact on the ridership. In fact, for the 08 budget, we projected a ridership increase on the rail of 2%, and actual year to date is averaging about 3%.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Zimmerman, and then Mr. Gill, you want to go first?
Well, Chris and I may be asking the same question, but would you suspect that a lot of this has to do with price of gas?
Gee, did something happen to the price of gas?
Which we didn't know at the time, but we were just hopeful that folks would find a way to want to increase their right use of the transit system, thus I think also the growth factors, the cost of gas.
That is your comment.
Every time it gets stated as we thought there would be a fall, but there's been an increase, and what about elasticity? I mean, once again, elasticity is a ceteris paribus concept. All other things equal. All other things are never equal. And in this case, we can see the really big things that aren't equal. Anytime you get a fare increase, you cannot say what is actually going to happen as a result of that, just as you can't say if you cut fares what would happen. You know what the tendency of that will be, other things equal. But all the things that have been driving increased ridership over recent years are continuing in effect, some of them greater than ever, notably the price of oil. So we really shouldn't be shocked if ridership continues to rise.
And I think that's something that people remember the next time we talk about fare changes.
Yes. If we could predict what was happening to the price of petroleum before we make a fare increase, we'd know better.
Yeah.
And we'd be in a different business.
It would be right.
Moving on.
Next slide on parking revenue. Again, the parking revenue is coming in as projected. We have roughly 58,000 parking spaces. Going to Metro Bus. At the top of the slide, we are seeing this year, and we saw it before the fare increase, that revenues were not increasing. We had projected a 1% increase in ridership, and we are just virtually dead even with the prior year as far as the number of trips. So in a separate presentation, we're going to recommend that we adjust the 09 revenue for bus by this amount of money.
So however, along that same line, then that
the same explanation.
The increased cost of gasoline is not affecting bus riders. So.
Something is causing it just to remain constant. I'm not sure what that is.
We're not attracting additional bus riders, even though we did not raise the fare and gas prices have gone up.
Yeah. There's so many factors happening, the economy, service ridership.
Data's also not as good.
Yeah.
And you do see in the box a good news. We have seen a 6% increase in the use of Smart Trip on the bus, which of course meant there was no increase. So the summation of all these charts on the next slide, the fare increase is producing the revenue as expected. No ridership loss, no measurable change, although small changes as we've discussed in the long distance ridership. And we'll look later at the proposed changes, but on the rail revenue, we're not going to recommend the change, although base we need to monitor. If the 3% ridership increase continues into next year, that'll be a positive. No change in parking and reduce the bus revenue in 09. Because we think the base is going to be lower. And just as a point of reference, the rail revenue is projected at $504 million, parking $51 million, and bus $111 million. So you can see these adjustments are very, very minor in the overall totals of the revenues.
We are seeing
an increase in bus ridership and ride on.
Have any reason to know why? I don't know. Do we know what Fairfax Connector is doing? Mr. Linton just pointed out that Ride-On is experiencing increases in ridership. Part of that is because there are some free fares. Do we know what's happening in the other systems?
We're doing well. Yeah. We continue to go up. You know, we're going quite up. A bit.
Right.
Circulated ridership is consistent. Didn't see anything
in spike. Yeah.
But it's growing.
Yes.
The question becomes, why is Metro Bus different. Flat while everybody else is growing?
One thought, I was kind of through with Mr. Linton, is that especially for your long trip drivers, Metro Rail is more attractive, and it's the cost of driving your car long trip, riding rail, in some sense. Your bus trip is typically going to be a short haul, shorter trip, so less impacted by gas prices, perhaps. But then it also could do have something to do with the level service itself, probably.
Another one too, which is that if you're to the extent that congestion and time is a factor, and people find it more advantageous as congestion gets worse to take the Metro Rail, the bus doesn't necessarily have the same advantage. We're not providing an advantage for most of our bus service, and as congestion gets worse, the bus service slows down. So until you start doing things like providing some lanes, queue jumpers, some priorities for the bus,
right,
you don't necessarily benefit.
All of which is true. It does not explain why some systems seem to be growing and others are not.
Also true.
The Ride-On system, as my understanding, is adding has added services, additional services in Prince George's County. With the Metro system, particularly on certain routes, we have capacity issues. We have crowded buses, and until we add additional services, I think it's a whole host of factors. It's the time. Can we get people to point A to point B quicker? The shorter trips on the Metro system, all of those factors. Have increased as well as I think the economy is increasing. You look at the if there's a job loss, I'm just speculating again. That would there's where you see the impact.
I think to some degree it may be worth looking at, but it may track with who's adding service in one form or another. Mm-hmm. And I think you may find that certain systems like ART and Ride-On are adding service, and that's promoting the growth in ridership. Metrobus, we haven't done a lot of that in a long time.
Yeah.
Just to that point, the REX system on Richmond Highway definitely adds connector ridership because the REX buses are full and they're running parallel. People are forced to get on the connector bus who sought to get on the REX bus. So the specialty lines are actually producing riders on the connector unintentionally. So it's an interesting point.
So if we put in a priority bus system, we'll also increase ridership on our regular bus.
I expect that.
And your summary, though, is that we have an additional $2.2 million hole in revenues.
Yes, it is.
And if there are no more questions, let's move on to the next item, which is the urgent unfunded needs and how we're going to deal with those.
Give me Chuck. Okay. Mr. Chairman, in March, we briefed the board on a $489 million urgent unfunded needs over a six-year period. At the board's request, we reviewed the FY08, 09, and 10 Metro Matters program to determine if we could manage the cash flow to reallocate funding to implement some of the most critical, urgent, unfunded capital needs. Next slide. This slide will identify the reallocation sources that came out of that review. In FY08, $19.5 million was identified that could be reallocated. In FY09 and FY10 projects, $90 million was identified that could be reallocated as well, which totaled out to $109.5 million. Next slide.
Go back. You said reallocated and it says deferred.
Was reallocated. These were the dollars that we went back in and looked at each one of the years, so that should be the dollars that were reallocated from each year.
The question is, does the work have to be done? The answer is yes. So we are deferring some of the projects.
And you're deferring them beyond 2010, is what you're saying, or not?
So some of them will be, this, the $109.5 million will be deferred beyond FY10.
And that will become part of our 2011 and 12 program.
Correct. It will become part of the FY11 CIP for that point on.
And that's because we have higher priority needs that we need to focus on at the present time.
That's correct.
So this is a reprogramming within Metro Matters.
That's correct.
Question. I'm not sure it's a reprogramming. I think the word reallocation.
Reallocation. Is reallocation.
They're not actually moving things between line items. They're just moving the time, and there's no indication as to when those things will occur, presumably.
Nonetheless, if you weren't short on the funds, these are things you'd be doing sooner. You're basically forced to make a priority decision about what is more urgent than what.
It's, yes, it is. It's that, as well as there were a couple of projects that we looked at from a cash flow standpoint, that we determined we would not make those expenditures within this two-year period of time.
And some things you just wouldn't be able to get it done. You wouldn't be able to spend that money in that time.
Right.
Time.
That's correct.
So you might as well reassign it.
Yes.
Time. But some of these are things where you're actually making the decision, well, we'd like to do that, but it's not as important as this other thing, so we're going to put it farther out.
It's combination of both of those.
If you had the funding, some of these you'd be doing, some of them you wouldn't be able to. Of the things that you're deferring, well, I'll hold the question. I'll
okay.
Hold.
Thank you. Keep going.
Mr. Cato, what process did you go through to reach this particular conclusion? And how long has this process been going on?
Process actually been going on for a couple of months. We have I have a biweekly capital project review meeting that we go through each and every project to evaluate its status. That's how we came to the reallocation of some of the dollars in these three time frames. But we reviewed the projects and seeing if the projects were going to be completed on time, or the dollars associated with the project were going to be spent. And if it came down to that some of the dollars were not, that's when the reallocation process came in, that we started looking at how much dollars can we actually put aside for each fiscal year, starting with FY08.
Now, how do we define, and who assisted us in defining what is the urgent capital funding need?
Well,
as opposed to this $332 million.
That was a joint, I guess you'd say, joint process meeting with all the department heads, took a look at it, as well as what the need was in the infrastructure at that particular time. For example, you know, the incident that took place last year around August or September kind of initiated that and started that when we started looking at our traction power substations, our negative and positive cabling returns, and we started looking at all that, saying, we need to have that, and where is that at in the initial package that we have, maybe within Metro Matters. But that became a critical need, something that we needed to have, considering that we were going, increasing our trains from 6 to 8 car trains as well. We had to make sure that we had the power distribution system in order to support that.
But
clearly there was a commitment to a certain specific spending, which we are now changing course, and we're moving away from that specific spending to going to other specific spending. Am I right?
That is
true. And I need to know more about how we've separated the sheep from the goats here, and how we and why didn't we start off with these priorities? Why have we, if this was so compelling and of such great interest and so important, why wasn't that the starting point rather than, I've got to tell you, I see here in our papers is this very detailed, this very small print, but it's very detailed information on what's being done here. But I don't understand why what we're moving to was not the initial highest priority.
Just looking at the documentation, going back to the original priorities, we put together a list for Metro Matters, and it was a list of programs and projects that we intended to work on over the life of the Metro Matters program. In the real world, events change. In the real world, we looked at what was working and what was not working. The traction power stations, that we determined that we did not have sufficient power for the additional cars that were being added, or they were not being added at a pace that would keep up with the demand on the system. That was not something that we projected, and I'm assuming I wasn't here, but just in conversations at the time we put Metro Matters together. At this point in time, what we have done is we've looked at the risk factors and determined where is the greatest risk. And from that perspective, that changed the priority of some of the projects. Looking ahead 5 years, even with the new plan that we're putting together, it's an assumption looking forward into the future. The real world sometimes is different than that view of what look, you know, 5 years back. And so that's why the change. It's a normal process. I think most capital construction projects go through is an annual review of here's what we planned on 5 years ago, but here are the needs today, and they might be slightly different than what we planned 5 years ago.
I may add something here perhaps that will help in the discussion. If we go to page 137 of this packet, all the way to the end, where it talks about, this is our monthly report for March. Go down to the bottom line, it says 2008 grand total capital projects. What we can see in here is that we had budgeted almost $700 million, $687 million. We are in an expenditure budget right now. That's how we work. It's how much has actually been spent. Quarters of the year, we spent $367 million, slightly more than half of the total, which says we have slightly less than half of the total to do in 3 months. Okay. The probability of that occurring is relatively low. So what that tells us that is that on an expenditure basis, money is probably available, probably, can't tell you for sure, probably available to do most if not all of these projects, but that money is available only in the short term. It's something that we've got to be able to deal with next year, the year after, and in particular, as soon as Metro Matters is over. Because all it's doing is saying, is the money here now or is the money here later? And what's happening is, as always happens with projects, there's enough money left over now to do some of these substitutions, but you still have to do all of the projects eventually. And part of the question is that eventually that we're going to run into a crunch next fiscal year or the year after? Mm-hmm. We know it's going to be at least by 2011. But because the question, by then we have to have more real money because the commitment here is just for this cash flow. So I guess one of the things I'd like to do is ask that we get a report in July, an early report before all the books are closed, just a soft close, on where are we in terms of the actual expenditures, so we have some sense as to what degree are we truly deferring projects that mm-hmm. would have happened anyway, and to what degree are we just changing the way they're being funded. We know that in the end we got to pay for them one way or another, and there's another $500 million we got to come up with, and the 2011 and 2012 are, we may have already spent all the money.
That's a very important point that you make. The point I was making was somewhat different, though. I was trying to understand how this prioritization shift has occurred.
I guess part of what I'm saying is,
what is the,
you can probably do it all in the short term. You can't do it all in the long term.
Within the authority that we, the capital authority that we currently
within
have?
Within the expenditure budget that you have. And that's the problem. Is because you can move the money around, and that's what state highway administrations all over do. All the state highway groups, they just move the money around so that they can move all the projects. It still means that in the end, you have to have the extra money for the extra projects. It's just when you have to have it. For us, that may be next year, it may be the year after, it almost certainly is in 2011. So, yes, part of what's happening here is a deferral. Most of those projects probably wouldn't have happened anyway because you can't spend money that fast. And that's what you're seeing in that page at the end of the report.
But we can spend money that fast for other priorities.
No.
Can't do it there either.
I think what's happening is the original assessment was that we needed 200 and some odd million. I think what we got back was actually within the next 2 years we can spend 157, but we can't spend 200 and some odd. And that says, okay, this really looks at what we can do and what we can't do. And that's why it would be useful in July for us to look at this again and say, having finished the fiscal year, what could we do and what couldn't we do?
I appreciate that. I think what we're seeing is we're getting a more refined estimate as we go. We got the sort of rough cut, and that's, you know, as that is more and more refined, the manager's able to say more, well, within the next 12 months, here's really what I would do, and, you know, 12 months after that, and so on. And that's why we're getting a more clarified number in terms of the immediate needs. The overall picture, as you just said, though, is still pretty much the same thing. By the end of the term, you still have all the things you had to do. I want to look at an aspect of that. If we look at the summary list of needs, I'm looking at page 71, and that's sort of the general category. This is in the appendix, of course, but it then goes into much more detail. But just look in terms of the overall list. Capital goods, you know, cover a wide variety of things that basically last more than a year. So, you know, some are things you invest in that will continue to function and serve you for a generation. Some of them are 15-year items. Some of them are 8-year items. Some of them are actually maybe not really that long at all, but they're part of an overall thing that's a capital investment, so we include it. You know, you build a road, and you know, a new road, and the road bed is going to be there for a long time. Blacktop, though, is going to be changed out every few years. Now, when we actually do a capital budget, we adjust the way we finance that, to some degree at least, based on that. So typically we have, you know, a PAYGO budget, which is really ongoing funds being used for a capital purpose, and a certain portion of our budget should be that, be sound. We use bonds, and we, you know, other kinds of debt. But let's say we use bonds. If we're using 20-year bonds, we don't really want to fund 8-year items with 20-year bonds. And so you're moving things around in a way that, again, covers the cost of all this, but some portion of what you're buying on the list is going to be appropriate to do debt financing. Some of it's going to be done with ongoing financing, and you work that out. I assume when I look at this list that what I just said would apply to things that come under these different categories. Some of them I know, some of them I don't know. I mean, a bus you hope to get, I figure, at least a dozen years out of, although in practice we do more, and you have to overhaul it. Rail cars are 35 to 40-year items with an overhaul at 17 to 20 years. Nobody would have a problem, for instance, issuing bonds to pay for rail cars. But you've got items in there that probably don't work that way, like an information technology, I'm guessing. So if I was looking at this overall program we have here, how would you be financing across 6 years, you know, this almost $500 million? What's the overall notion of how that gets financed? How much of that would wind up being debt-based, and how much of it is pay-as-you-go and that kind of thing?
Well, to your point, you obviously wouldn't want to do a 20-year borrow on a technology that had a 5-year life or something. So the original Metro Matters had an expenditure of $2.7 billion cash of all types of projects, but mostly longer-term, longer-life projects, and the anticipated borrow was $611 million. So we're not going to significantly change those ratios. So as we move through this, if we indeed had to go to borrow, the $48 million is at question, but based on what Mr. Benjamin said, and I totally agree, the odds are very slim that we're going to have to borrow that money. We'll manage the cash. Projects won't move quite as rapidly as anticipated. So, but if we were to get to a point where we had to do a borrow, we would have to analyze what we were borrowing for. And if it was technology, we'd want to have probably a 5 to 7 year maturity, and others would be long term. I don't see that happening because of the ratio of federal money, local money being the preponderance of the revenue, and really the borrow stream being relatively small in the overall program.
And with that, you mean actually direct borrow, but when you say, for instance, state local money, some of that is bond money, it's just not your bond.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Some of this comes from the bonds that are issued by our various jurisdictions.
Yes, and the only point I'm making is I don't see that this reallocation is in any way adjusting the overall Metro Matters program as to what was paid through borrow and what was paid through federal money or other.
But what I'm actually interested in is, if I was looking at this as a bill I have to pay ultimately over a 6-year period, and I'm trying to figure out what I need to pay, what I got now and what I don't have, one of the things I have to figure out is, you know, how much of this actually is basically going to be available within the resources we think we're going to have for an annual budget, what would go to capital. When you look at all this question about, well, how much could we spend and how much is, you know, what's going to be freed up, whatever, and how much of it is additional resources, and then how would I be paying for that and how much revenue? So, for instance, if you tell me, I just to make it really crude, if half the cost of this were in items that are really long-term, that were going to be more than 20 years, then whether it's Metro or somebody else doing it, I'd say, I need to know what the debt service is, because I'm going to issue bonds for that. And so if I was trying to figure out on a jurisdictional level, what's the number I've got to come up with my share for, then I would know, okay, you know, I can support this much debt with this much, so I need to set aside a revenue stream to support that, because that's what it's going to cost to support the bonds to do that. And if, you know, it's only the other portion were things that were shorter term, I could figure out what the annual cost was going to be. That means it's purely FIGO, and I say that's X million a year. And then I could figure out how much, you know, that bill was and how much was my share. And in the end, I think that's what we need to work toward, to figuring out, because otherwise, I mean, there's always different numbers here. What we really need to know is, what's new money I got to look for? What's going to actually fit? So in part, you're asking, answering a question that in a very short-term context, looks like we can manage here, or we're pretty darn close. But in a slightly longer term, not very far out at all, but just a few years looking forward, I know we've got to find some money. And then there's the stuff that isn't on here, because that rail cars, that's like 6,000 series, right? There's nothing there about replacing a Roar car.
No.
That's, you know, a third of the fleet that we know we got to figure out how to do. And that is part of what we need to figure out, just what is the money we're trying to find, and to what degree do commitments that the jurisdictions have already made to one degree or another help us address that. You know, again, until a few months ago, all three jurisdictions had come up with, you know, that where they were going to pay an extra $50 million a year for a capital program. Obviously, you're trying to get the federal government to participate as well. We've now had a major bump in the road on the Virginia side, and we'll find out if we're going to get our $50 million back probably in a couple of months. But I'd be answering the question differently if I knew I had that in hand than if I didn't have that in hand. But I need to be able to get some kind of sense of what's the number we need just to take care of this, you know, in money over that period of time, apart from the other ones you're not classifying as urgent unfunded needs, but which are really, really important too, and are right behind this list.
Mr. Zimmerman, I think one of the things that you're saying is a really critical consideration here is, first of all, this $489 million, we may be able to deal with part of that, $157 million, over the next year or two, given cash flow. But that's cash flow.
Right.
It doesn't say that we don't need the money. We
right.
still
right.
need the money.
Exactly.
And when is it going to show up, and how are we going to get it? And the other part of that is, what this is showing and the numbers that I showed earlier are that some of the stuff is pushing farther out, and as it pushes farther out, our ability to deal with 2011 and 2012 is already compromised. We may already be at the point where a lot of that money is already spent, and if we as jurisdictions can't come up with more by that time period, we're in very, very deep trouble, because we won't be able to do anything new, and as you pointed out, we're at the point where we have to start considering replacement of rail cars.
Right. Now, on the other side, just to wrap it up, to make it very simple, suppose you're bonding the whole thing. Well, you know, if I had $50 million a year, I probably can support, you know, $500 million to $600 million in bonds. And so I can see that, well, you know, I got some resources then, and, you know, but obviously that has to be refined as well. But I think it really does make the point that we actually have to have that revenue we've been talking about, you know, at the very least from the three compact jurisdictions.
If you don't get your $50 million, this
then I'm having a real problem.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just to piggyback on this, you talked about, you know, the balance of the Metro Matters program that we won't, you know, that will be extended, that may be compromised. It's compromised in that we won't do it in a timetable we initially established, but compromise further in terms of just additional costs, period. I mean, you know, it could almost probably come close to doubling the cost, you know, to do these projects if we don't do them within the already designated time period. But more importantly, when we get to with the $50 million from each jurisdiction, state or not, I'm speaking for myself now, for my jurisdiction, we're going through these very same challenges with our six-year CIP, where we already have just today an $80 million hole, and trying to find how we're going to fix that and shifting things around, I can tell you now, there's no way that we're going to have the capability or the ability to take on any additional WMATA burden as part of CIP costs. So and that's just a word for the wise. That, you know, and I'm sure others in that are in the same situation. Despite our challenges here, any thought, the least thought of being able to put some of this burden on localities that are, you know, members here of the compact, it's just not going to be real. It can't happen.
We're facing a substantial challenge.
Yeah, I'm trying to picture all this in light of all that relates to where we are in terms of our discussion with the FTA. How does that fit that you're putting in front of?
Let me just add, I mean,
no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Ms. Hewlett wanted to speak.
Okay. You know, my questions just have to be are on some of these specific capital needs, and it's not my place to judge which ones are the priorities, and I guess that sort of dovetails on Mr. Graham's comments on how we, you know, how long this process has been underway and how we arrived at these priorities and versus other priorities, and I'm looking at one thing with regard to the surveillance cameras on buses and whatnot, you're currently pursuing grants for that one. So that one, then are we hopeful that we'll get the entire amount?
Yes, that's what we're hopeful.
Okay. And is there any other type of, so it's looking pretty good there. So is there anything else there that might be applicable for a grant anywhere?
Well, we're trying to find every dollar that's available. The ones that we listed is probable for grants. We have a high degree of confidence.
Okay.
We're searching other areas, but we didn't want to list something that we have a very small percentage chance of getting.
Okay. And then I was looking at the ceiling tile replacement and kiosk expansion, and the money is allocated, the $32 million that is needed seems to apply to the ceiling tile and underground stations. Are you doing, yet the caption says kiosk expansion as well. Are you doing both or not?
Which page are you on?
My pages are different. I think mine is 73, which makes yours 71 or 75. And you're two ahead or two back.
The ceiling towels and kiosks.
Because they're different because I brought mine with me, so I'm not using one in the book.
It's like one or two more.
Yes.
Okay.
What page is it?
About 74.
74. Okay. Yeah,
third
mine's
one down.
73. Okay. So is it kiosk expansion as well?
I'm sorry, is it kiosk expansion?
It's a ceiling tile.
I see a ceiling tile, but I just want... But it says in kiosk expansion as well.
Yes, and the kiosk expansion is part of that.
Okay.
We're taking a look at these kiosks has been in the stations for since they were built, basically. So we're taking a look at the kiosks as well.
Okay.
Trying to enlarge.
Expansion?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, I'm now curious as to what it is that's in there.
Where are we?
Page
74. I was just curious about that.
The ceiling tile?
The ceiling tile, there's nothing for the kiosks.
Right, that's why I was wondering.
I don't see kiosks here. It talks about
the ceiling tile. It says, in the first column where it says subject, 1, 2, 3, the third item down, says ceiling tile replacement and kiosk expansion. And I was just curious.
And I would get that detail, but my discussions on this issue were the towels and the ceiling, not...
Okay.
That's been my discussions on the issue.
Okay.
Dave Couch is here, and I was going to have him answer that.
Well... And I would think that, you know, there's so many that are important, and I'm looking at that same page, the bumpy tiles, which is a $10 million expenditure to make it ADA compliant, those truncated domes. I know that to me sounds, I mean, that's pretty imperative, and in the scheme of things is high, but not as high as some of these other expenditures. But, okay.
Mr. Graham. I need to get some clarity on this because... You know, I let me get out of the forest for a minute, maybe permanently for the purposes of this meeting. This is being done under the gun in terms of FTA and Dulles extension, to my mind. And I've got to understand just what this means in terms of the dedicated funding commitments, where I can tell you, you know, increasingly adverse circumstances, in terms of economic conditions and funding, is going to affect all of us. I mean, the District of Columbia is facing its first deficit year in 5 years next year. And then we have committed $50 million to come out of our sales tax. Mm-hmm. But in order to send that $50 million to Metro WMATA, we're going to have to plug that hole with $50 million from somewhere else. And none of this has yet been triggered. But my first question is, it sounds like you're suggesting that we're going to delay some things in order to do other things. But as Mr. Benjamin points out, it may be possible for you to do it all because of unspent.
Part of it is in the process of being delayed just because it takes longer to do things than originally planned. And that
right.
gives you capacity.
Right, but I thought I was hearing something different, that you're rearranging the priorities so that you can attend to what is now known as urgent unfunded capital needs, which are listed in these sheets.
Okay, well, there's two pieces. One is my attention on these issues of urgent capital needs is based upon the needs of the agency today, and they're separate and apart for all the issues that are happening with Dulles. That's been my driving force. The other piece is that ultimately in 2011, all of the projects are going to exceed the dollars that are currently allocated for capital needs. So we are delaying from the standpoint of plan some of the projects because they were too aggressive. We could not accomplish them in the time period that was originally planned. So that is a delay from a plan standpoint. And we're going to use the cash flow to take care of the needs that we have today. But ultimately, as we move forward into the future, additional dollars will be necessary from whatever sources, the $50 million per jurisdiction, reauthorization of the federal transportation bill, any federal bill should one occur or pass that provides additional resources to the agency, or we won't be able to do all the projects.
But see, what I need to have more clarity on than I have today is this seeming requirement. And, you know, you all have been deeply involved in this. I have not. But what I read is that there's now a requirement. We're going to go forward. There's going to be federal funding available. But with the stipulation that Metro WMATA attend to some $450 million. I don't know whether they call it urgent unfunded capital needs or not, but there's a stipulation that we have to attend to this. And my only question is, is what does this mean, you know, in terms of the District of Columbia? What does this mean in terms of these priorities? What does it mean in terms of the dedicated funding, which we are committed to, although the skies are ever more cloudy financially in terms of our city, and where this money is going to come from? And there's another jurisdiction at this table that has to come up with $50 million in terms of the specific jurisdiction. But the District of Columbia will have to, if this all gets triggered. So can you or anyone else speak plainly to these issues so that we can have a better understanding of what this means?
Well, let me make a statement. Mr. McKay wants to speak. We have a challenge in front of us. I don't think the challenge is this minute. And as I said, it may be by the end of this fiscal year, it may be sometime during the next fiscal year. It certainly will be by 2011. Mm-hmm. We need another $500 million to do all of this stuff. I think there's a long history in this authority. For the last 30 years, we jurisdictions have always funded all of the operating costs and all of the critical capital needs of this agency. It's been an important part of everybody's budget. I understand that Virginia right now has some issues as to how it's going to manage to do that. I have every reason to believe that all of us will come up with those critical funds at the far end of this. They may have to do some difficult things, but they'll get there one way or another. And that continues a 30-year history of doing this. So I think we have to put it in that context. That's not going to change.
Two things. I just want to reiterate what I already heard, which is the FDA discussions are not the trigger for the urgent unfunded needs of Metro.
Right.
And so I don't want anyone to leave this room thinking, one, that that's the fact, and two, that somehow, you know, we should be funding these because of a trigger dealing with Dulles Rail. I mean, that's just, I certainly that's not the consensus of this board, and I don't want anyone to think that that is the consensus. It's not factual. And it's certainly not the consensus. But I want to go back to Mr. Benjamin's original comments when we started this conversation about what's been expended versus what's been budgeted. And I heard that we don't have the capacity to complete these projects in the time frame that we once thought. But I haven't heard an explanation as to why we can't. I mean, going back to Metro Matters was to be the most important thing at Metro to deal with the issues that the system was facing. And I guess I'm a little surprised to find that we can't get the projects done in the Metro Matters program in a timely enough manner if that is our highest priority.
Let me give you one example, and there's others throughout all of the projects that we have. The escalators. We have a very aggressive program in repairing and updating the escalator and elevator system. If we were to execute that program of the level of expenditure that we have, then the report we had this morning about which escalators are down would be far higher. Because, you know, if you take out one escalator, let's say going up and down, and you have the other one, you have some abilities to get people moved. But if you do both, then you basically do not have the ability to move people into your station. And so it was the dollar amounts that are there are very aggressive, and we're trying to get them all repaired, but do so with the least disruption to the system. That's one small piece of it. There are other components of projects on the tracks as well as in some of the stations that we have limited hours that we can maintain it. And we're going through an event in the next few weeks that's going to impact services, but we have to get some of it done. We're stretching those periods of time out, not the safety part, because we're going to do the safety pieces. And so it's going to take longer. When Metro Matters was first designed, I think the assumption was that we would have more track time than what we really do. And again, we could do it all, but it's going to have a huge impact on our services, a very negative impact on the services that we operate. And so we're trying to keep an even balance, and that balance is going to flow up some cash flow to do the project. But come 2011, ultimately there will be a large need on the part of the agency. And again, how do we fund that? There's been discussion about the local share. We've talked about the reauthorization bill, which I am very actively working on, as well as Director Benjamin. And is there, I will hopefully, there will still be a push for some type of federal funding for Metro. That hasn't gone away. I'm not seeing the existing bill, but some type of federal funding.
And my last question is this, has this item been presented to the JCC? And do changes, including deferrals of items in Metro matters, have to be approved, reviewed, and acted on by the JCC at all before they get to our point?
I haven't.
I'm not sure.
I was going to say, I'm not sure. We haven't, or I haven't presented it to JCC, I don't think. Chuck?
It certainly, to me, seems like a pretty large shift in priority, even if it's just being characterized as a deferral. I'd certainly be a lot more comfortable if the jurisdictions were briefed completely on this before, you know, we're asked to take action.
And that we should do. We're not. One aspect, Metro Matters requires, if you wish to shift funds from one category to another, it requires the approval of the jurisdictions. However, having said that, communicating with all the jurisdictions and the various committees is something I think we should do. Okay. But it's not a requirement under Metro Matters.
Thank you.
Mr. Lynn?
I mentioned the issue with the FDA. I recognize that when Metro Matters together prior to your arrival, and I also recognize that over the last several since you've been here, you've been doing an assessment of where we are now, where our stations are, where our capital needs are, some of those things. Other incidents we had within the last year, and fires and other hazards. Once you do that, you prioritize efforts. I'm sure that's part of this. But I'm also wondering, just in terms of revenues, is the fact to get the money that we're requesting from the federal government. Maryland, Virginia is able to restore optimistically anyway. So if in fact those funding mechanisms are in place, the $50 million from the district, $50 million from Maryland, $100 million from the feds, then where are you?
We're at $300 million a year in far better shape to be able to do the project.
Are you tremendous tracking, impact. Tracking this program?
Back to my question.
We're deferring, what, 300 and?
332.
So 300 million of the 332 would be covered under that scenario that you mentioned.
300 million of the 332 would be covered in that scenario.
Yes.
No, that's 1 year's money.
Yeah, one year's.
If these were not that you would bond at all, but let's assume that we're talking about right. things like rail cars that you'd be bonding, and just to get some of this is magnitudes. If you knew you had $300 million a year flowing, I mean, 100 million would support what over $1 billion of program. So if we had that money now, we wouldn't even really be talking about this. We'd be on to the next level and the next level,
yeah.
and you'd be saying, what are all the things you need? We'd be funding the roar car replacement and other things like that. This wouldn't be an issue because that would be, you know, well more than enough. That number came out of the estimate now done several years ago by the Blue Ribbon panel, which was looking at this and beyond it to what you'd need over a decade, basically, and coming up with the money to fund that. And so in the absence of that, of course, now we're looking at, this is what we've been doing all these years, is we keep going back and saying, what's the urgent priority? Okay, what's the really urgent priority? What's the really, really, really urgent priority? And we just, you know, put these other things off. But if, I mean, that is an amount of money that would largely solve the problem if we had it in hand.
Thank you for speaking.
To get that money.
Yes.
Shall we continue this presentation or something? Any other comments? Is there anything else we need to say on this one? I think we've pretty well exhausted.
And it's clear that I think the instruction is to also talk to all three jurisdictions to meet those various committees.
What did you say?
To meet with the regional committees concerning any changes that we're making on capital.
Because we have no action item today.
Right. This is not an action item.
Would this ever be an action item before this board?
It has to.
Has to.
We have to approve the budget.
Specific.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move on to the adjustments to the proposed budget?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could begin on page 88, there are two categories of adjustments. One is primarily service changes that the board either has approved or is considering, and the second category are changes proposed by the general manager. On the next slide.
Before you go too far on that, the little thing that says DC pays or dot, dot, dot. It's on the right-hand side of the third.
Right. The first grouping, pardon me, of service changes, the last one where it says DC pays, or if the board decides to make that a regional route, which if you drop to the next category, the second one that says pending changes, the first four routes at this point would qualify as regional routes. So if they're converted to regional, and we'll see the detail, right now it says DC's payment would go down, Maryland and Virginia. That is further detailed as we talk about the regional routes in a later presentation. So the option there is that it stays and as non-regional and DC pays, or it gets converted depending on the will of the board.
Are you saying the first item of pending changes and the last item of approved changes are the same thing?
I'm just saying that that one item, the bus route 79 service, that there's an option there.
Would become an additional one? Or you're saying it would move into the overall budget as opposed to being a reimbursable one?
Yes,
side.
Correct. Yes. And then the next three, the same issue at hand, do they become regional service? And if so, the specific numbers, again, are shown in a later presentation.
I have a problem here again. Back to that same old presentation where you cut from $41 million to $20 million. The yellow line extension of Grosvenor Turnbacks specifically called out as funded within the budget. Now they move to beyond the budget.
Back to the October presentation.
Yeah.
And my only comment on that is from the October until the budget changes were made and then in the January budget, that has stayed consistent.
It's really hard for us to do our work when we don't know what's in and what's out. I mean, you very specifically said these adjustments to regional funding are in the budget. And apparently it went out, and now you're putting it back in as something we got to pay extra for.
Well, if it goes to regional service.
If it was originally listed as part of the regional service in that original presentation.
The only comment I can make, Mr. Benjamin, is that original presentation in October, my understanding was a discussion. It was not a proposed budget. The first proposed budget under the committee was the January. And these were included in the January.
We can find a better way to do this next year because we can't keep track of what you're doing. Okay.
Last two items in that pending changes, the restructuring of the 30 line, which we've discussed in detail, and you see the 400,000. And we've also discussed the Southeast Garage. This is just basically an accounting adjustment in the Metro budget that would recognize we have a placeholder of revenue of $1.8 million. As we've discussed earlier, the total is $4.8 million, so this is just an internal adjustment that we'd be making. So, if
well,
I can...
The $3 million for the Southeastern bus garage cost, this is for what period of time? Is that the total amount for FY '09?
Yes. Yes.
Clarify, the total amount for FY '09 less the 1.3.
Which will be spent in FY '08.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
You said that earlier.
Yeah, that's '08.
That's true.
That amount will be gone by, you know, the end of Metro's FY '08 or the very beginning of FY '09 for Metro.
So you're pointing out that this doesn't count to 4.8 that was on the other.
Well, there's 1.8 in the budget. This is to bring the total to 4.8. We had when we built the budget in October, we had basically a placeholder account. So this is no change from the prior conversation. It's an adjustment in the Metro revenue budget. Yes, sir.
Yeah, right.
Yes, sir.
Right. And your comment on DC paying is, again, the discussion we had before.
Correct.
All right. General manager's budget adjustments?
Yes, on page 90, these are adjustments that are being proposed by the general manager. We've had conversation before that a budget reduction exercise was put into place, resulting in a reduction of $12.6 million. We have had significant changes, as it has everyone, in energy. The proposal is to add $15.8 million, and there was some conversation earlier in meeting about diesel. When we built the budget in October, the diesel was at $2.75 a gallon. We put in the budget, we're projecting that we should have $3.25 in the budget, and that even assumes that the diesel would have to come down ever so slightly because we're paying $3.32 today. That adjustment is $6.5 million, and the electric account, we had put an 8% inflation factor on it. It's looking more like 30%, and that would require the remainder, which is roughly $9 million more. The next item we've discussed, reducing the bus passenger revenue, reducing.
Can I back you up on again, just so that I understand what's going on? After that same presentation, you had a contingency amount of $10 million for fuel inflation in the amount that the general manager showed. Now you have another 15.8. Are they one and the same? Did the $10 million go away?
Yeah, the $10 million was allocated in the budget, in the proposed budget. This would add another total $15.8 million to these two accounts.
So increasing it by 26 over where we were in October.
Yeah, it's about 30% of an increase. Okay, on the bus revenue, I think we've discussed that at length. There's a proposal to add 25 police officers and 3 sergeants at a cost of $2.4 million. There will be savings in the out year in fiscal 10 in the overtime account, but because of the training, roughly a year's training, there would not be a reduction in overtime in the fiscal 09 budget.
Let me pause you right there. This is a question which we've had before our committee. But where at the council, where are you going to get this money to pay for these additional police officers? It's not going to come from overtime. Where is it coming?
It's within the balance of all these accounts right here.
In other words, it's an increase.
It's that particular. Yes, sir.
It's offset by some other budget reductions and other shifting we made. My direction to the department heads was to come up with budget reductions across the board, and that's $12.6 million from the proposed budget. And then as you go through this whole process, and that's what Chuck is trying to go through, we get to the bottom line of what additional dollars we need and how we propose to fund those.
The next item Verizon fiber optic revenue. This is a new contract that's been negotiated that would generate additional revenue. The proposal is that revenue be allocated to a lease, to lease new phone equipment for the authority.
Can I stop you there? We went through the phone equipment same or different, and you said you didn't really need to replace the phone equipment now. Instead, you wanted to use it for other higher priorities in IT. Are we now leasing it $4 million, the stuff that we just moved over to IT that you said you didn't need?
Yes. Yes. I believe the number was $5.1 million, and what you said is exactly right. At the time it was presented, it was recommended that money go to system remediation, the HR system, the finance system, procurement system. But since that time, the renegotiation of the contract, the Verizon contract, resulted in a fairly sizable increase in revenue. And although it isn't sufficient to buy the phones, we could do a short lease purchase and use the 3.6 to do the lease in 09, and then it would wrap up in the in fiscal 10.
I think we told you at that time, don't come back and tell us now that you still got to go buy the phones.
Well, my recollection is that it was never a question of whether we had to buy the phones. We did have to buy the phones. It was more a question of timing.
But it wasn't going to be right away. What you're doing is you're saying that our budget needs to go up by $11 million in expense, and our subsidy by $6 million. And this is one of the items, because you could easily take the general manager's adjustments and apply some of those to the other ones. Right? That's so you are coming back and asking us for more money for this.
That is true, and that's what we, at the time, we said we wanted to move the monies because that was a higher priority. This is a recommended budget, and we're recommending this, but ultimately it's going to be this board that decides how that happens.
Okay, the last two items, the GASB 45, that's whether the board chooses to set aside money to fund the liability for retiree health. And based on the general conversation when the board discussed this, this would assume that we are not doing that, but again, a decision of the board, that's a policy issue. And then the last item, H, would assume that we end fiscal 08, the current year, with a surplus, which we're currently projecting, and that we would carry forward $3 million of that surplus as revenue in the 09 budget. And then all those items net to an increase in revenue of $4.4 million, increase in expenditure of $4.4 million, and the budget would be balanced.
Just a quick comment, and I'd like to just look at a couple of pages farther on, and then we need to take some, bring this to a conclusion. I don't know about other members of the board, but I really think our operating reserve is a critical part of what we're doing, and the first dollars that we have at the end of this fiscal year ought to go to operating reserve, not carried over into the following year to cover some of these items. I'd like to comment very briefly, because you have now what we're going to do next, on some of the materials that you sent us, and then come back with a proposal, if that's okay. On page, I don't know what it is in the book, 93, it's the one that has the organizational transfers.
It's page 94.
Okay, 94 in the book, I'm looking at my original one. If we look at this, just taken on a very, very broad basis, a year ago, we cut 200 people out of the budget, and I'm adding them all back in.
Well,
go ahead.
We cut out administrative positions. These are operating positions. And as you increase services or that role result in additional bodies, you're right. And it's the same for the police department. When we made the reductions, none of the reductions were in law enforcement or service related. They were all for administrative support. We are adding bodies back in, but they're in a different category. We're not building back the administrative force with the ones that we reduced.
135 of these are in rail service. With the exception of adding more rail cars, for which you need mechanics or more operators, what is the big increase in service that causes 135 more people?
We can give you, again, more detailed breakdown of what the positions are, and that's what we need to do.
I'm trying to do this on a higher level. It's just one of those things that strikes me. The next page in here shows our inventory. This was a question that I'd asked several times. And just my observation, our inventory has gone from $70 million to $100 million. It's a 44% increase over the 5 years that we're seeing there. What that would tend to indicate, I can't tell you for sure, but what we tend to indicate is that we haven't been very good about looking at our excess inventory. We haven't been looking at our obsolete inventory. We're buying things that we may or may not need right now. We'll need them eventually, but we may not need right now. It raises some questions about how we're spending our material and supplies money.
If I could,
next page, I'm sorry.
Could I make one? Yes. on the inventory, the numbers, I agree with the numbers you're saying. It's roughly a 7% increase in the value of the inventory over that period of time, which given the inflation on our budget, it's roughly equivalent to the inflation. So certainly we could cull the inventory. We can look at obsolete parts. But the growth has been about 7% a year in the value.
I think a critical issue in there is, do you really need everything that's there? And if not, are we budgeting too much for materials and supplies? One more item, just again, these are indicators, and then I want to make a suggestion. On the analysis on the next page where you've said, you know, what are the actual actuarial forecasts and what are the actual payouts on the third-party reserve, you point out that it averages $2 million, but the real measure is if you had followed what the actuarial forecasts had shown, you would have $10 million more in this reserve than you actually needed. You're now jumping it from an average of somewhere in the range of, you know, $20 to $30 million as payouts to $37 million in this year, and I believe you haven't paid it all out, nor are you likely to by the end of the year, and $43 million for next year. I can't say that that won't happen, but I'd say that the odds are pretty low given past history. Without getting into all of these, it's not our job to, I think, tell you which things to cut. I'd like to make a proposal to the committee, and that is back in March, there was a set of subsidies that were given to us as the adjustment subsidies for 09. I think those represent, and staff, I think, has copies of that. Could you hand them out so everybody gets it? Copy of those subsidies?
Yes.
Several jurisdictions firmly believe that the upper limit of what they can pay is what's on those charts. I would like to propose that we give guidance to the staff that says, if you want to do all of these things, go ahead and do all of these things. And we're more than happy to approve the 30s line increase, but it doesn't increase the budget. The subsidy's got to end up where those numbers are so that no jurisdiction is above the numbers that are there. That means that some jurisdictions may be less because once you do the formulas, they'll come up a little bit lower. But what it says is nobody gets above that set of numbers. I don't think we need a formal vote. If we want to have a formal vote, we could. Are there comments by any other? And, you know, and then after that, we can approve the 30s line and say, but no extra 400,000, it goes into these totals. And I would encourage you to look at some of the areas that we've talked about to see whether we can accommodate some of the things that need to be done within the dollars that are available.
I would 70.
Well, that's a good question. Are we saying that the non-regional stuff would become regional, but it's got to be within these totals?
Yes. Can you separate the questions?
I can.
I mean, one is you're asking, I mean, you want to direct the management basically to live within a specific number, the one they gave in March, and not to go above it for whatever we're going to do.
Correct.
And then there's the question of which, you know, what we do with these things. And, you know, I mean, those really are two different questions.
They are two different questions. And I'd like to see if there's a consensus on at least the first one, which says this is the upper limit of what it is we're going to contribute jurisdiction by jurisdiction.
Is this, are you presenting this as an action item?
No. This is informal guidance. You want to make it an action item?
I think you are, whether you make it explicitly so or not. I mean, you're asking the committee to give direction to the manager, and that really is an action.
You want to make it an action?
It's a reasonable one, but
it's not on the agenda.
Well, but I mean, it is. The topic's on the agenda. We give guidance to the budget committee.
Can we do it on the agenda? Does the committee wish to vote on this?
That's a point of clarification. The one issue we're trying to determine is to make sure that, you know, there was an expenditure for deadheading out of the Southeast bus garage. I need to make sure they're in this number, because that number might be an addition to the percentages that we came up with in March. That was a separate item that the board took.
Okay, so there are two additional items that we need.
The real question is, what's the difference between the bottom line you get here and the bottom line we would have otherwise. How much money are we really telling them to find?
From a subsidy point of view, it looks like $5.6 million plus the Southeast Bus Road.
Mr. Cato, is that?
Well, I mean, we need to go and look at these, but that sounds right out. It's $6 million, give or take.
It's about $6 million total?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. The $6
million.
Columbia should hear this also. They will
the
want
District
to know.
For the District of Columbia, key issue for you that's
Well, I just, I asked the question of how much money are we talking about in the chairman's proposal here? And it sounds like it's around $6 million, give or take, roughly. So the direction would amount to saying that the manager has to find $6 million freed up in the budget somehow.
In addition to what he has already proposing to find.
Now that is what he's proposing, about $6 million.
But he's now finding, where was that sheet where you had the list of? You're already cutting departments by $13 million.
Yes.
They're saying that he would have to find is he's going to need to find enough cuts to cause the $6 million right. in subsidy.
But over and above,
Chairman,
on page 90 of the materials, this would come over and above cuts that he has already identified for other priorities which he wishes to have. So the $12.6 million cut in departmental budgets would have to be increased or other savings found to accommodate the $6 billion.
Or he could decide not to do one or more of these.
Or one of the projects.
Yeah.
And we're going to make the decision in the end. This is really a direction to the manager to come back to us with, you know, to say he can find $6 million.
How are you going to come up with it?
And as direction to the manager to go back and do that now, I can support that. Because, I mean, we're going to act on the budget in the end anyway and decide what to do in all this. But you're really just telling them, we think you need to go back and find roughly $6 million. And then you get the chance to see if the world comes to an end. Or what.
And in that, there were two additional items of significance. One was, this does include the switch from non-regional to regional.
But that's an information item. We're not acting on that anyway.
No, but when we ask for the $6 million, that becomes an inherent part of that. And the other part is the general manager was noting that under the presumption that the Southeast Bus Garage has not gotten to the stage where it should go, that would be an issue beyond because it then would not, the money's either going to come out of the reserve or from the District of Columbia, but the District of Columbia contribution would, if I understand you correctly, be above the District of Columbia number here.
It might, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Those would be the two understandings in this thing. That wraps up.
So in other words, just to put a point on that, is that, for example, the 79 bus going to a regionalized service would be something that we are saying to the general manager, find this in the existing budget.
To do it, but we aren't necessarily approving that change at this moment.
No, but we're saying, but that's part of the $6 million.
That's correct.
And so we're saying,
turnbacks. But we're not necessarily approving it right now because it's part of that package that has been put in front of us.
I understand. But what we're saying is find the $6 million.
In the overall budget.
Within the existing budget with all of the existing assumptions.
$6 million of subsidy savings. Mr. Chairman, with regards
to the line item G here, the guidance for not funding debts from $45 to $4.7 million, can we get some more information on that?
This was the one that we discussed.
Yeah.
I apologize. But you guys have agreed to it. It's not like this.
Not formally, but there was certainly a feeling on the part of the committee that was something that we squeezed. We did not have
funding. We're funding it. It's
been a big time.
We went through that discussion in great detail on why some of the jurisdictions might, but the authority might not. I think even in the minutes, it notes the fact that the committee came out indicating that we did not need to fund that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so you're going to make a motion?
I can either make a motion or we can have indirect.
Why don't you
direction.
Make a motion?
Okay. I therefore move that this table, which I don't know quite how to identify, but it was the corrected subsidy allocation from the March presentation, be considered the upper level of subsidy for any jurisdiction for any jurisdiction. Any individual jurisdiction cannot go above the grand total for that jurisdiction. As much as we can afford, which means that the total may be lower once you run the formula, okay? But that no jurisdiction will go above the total that is here, and you need to give us what it is you need to do to get us there.
Just
not including the DC issue that you raised.
That's, I just want to ask that one question, because that makes it a $3 million shift.
Okay, that's a motion. Is there a second, sir? Any comment? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Given the direction. That takes us back to the 30s line. At this point, given the direction that we've done, one of the things we can do is approve the 30s line without the $400,000 increase in it. Just take that section out of it, because we've asked for the general manager to tell us how that $400,000, sorry, can fit into the overall budget, part of that proposal. So I would entertain a motion to approve the 30s line with the $400,000 provision missing.
And what would be the portent? What's the
part of the cut that we just asked him to do? Because it's part of what he just presented.
He's going
to
do it
within the budget.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
Moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any more comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, I think you have your direction.
I do.
Is that everything in this, other than subsequent agendas?
The monthly report.
Monthly report. Want to do the monthly report?
Very quickly. The monthly report, if I could ask you to turn to page 116. This is very similar to what we've been reporting for several months now. We are, again, on track with the money for the fare increase, and you see a number, $17.7 million, which is labeled fare increase. And then on the right-hand side, at the bottom, subsidy, and it's a surplus of $6.9 million favorable. And that's where we are through March.
Can I just ask a question since we're on this anyway? You've taken the gross number, which is 54.9 in revenues, and reduced it for the fare increase, right?
Yes.
It was 48.7. Why did the budget not go down?
Just set aside money to generate for the fare increase.
Wouldn't the budget be higher against the gross than it is against the net? I guess following that same argument, one of the things we said we were going to do was we were going to always show what the result was after that was taken out, right?
After.
In the details. Yet the numbers which we have here seem to match before, not after. Because you're showing actual revenues of 54.9, which is your gross number, not your net number. So you're not restating for the numbers being, for the fare increase being taken out.
Okay, we'll restate it that way.
Which we did last time, but
yeah, I think it should have been done that way.
This gets very confusing when the numbers aren't held constant and you don't do it consistently.
Okay. We will show it that way.
Any other comments? If not, this meeting is adjourned.